The contents of this page have not been reviewed or endorsed by the Chicago Bulls. All opinions expressed by Sam Smith are solely his own and do not reflect the opinions of the Chicago Bulls or their basketball operations staff, parent company, partners, or sponsors. His sources are not known to the Bulls, and he has no special access to information beyond the access and privileges that go along with being an NBA-accredited member of the media.
Hi, this is Sam Smith. Welcome back to my weekly podcast. I think I'm going to start today with an apology. My podmaster, Jeremy, had suggested that I read a letter last week, which I did. And so I picked that one and I called the writer stupid. I always counsel my son, Connor, not to call people stupid, especially until you know them. At least that's the advice I often get from Charles Barkley, who calls people stupid even when he doesn't know them. But that's what makes him so lovable. But I can't remember who I was, and I normally don't do that. But it was kind of at the culmination of so many of these letters questioning Derrick Rose about not coming back soon enough, or quickly enough, or intently enough from his ACL surgery, that he didn't have heart and he didn't care anymore, and he wasn't the same person. And frankly, you know, I understand fan frustration, or, well, I actually don't, but I say I do. But I think more toward Derek, it kind of bothered me, because this is really, in all the years I've been around sports and the NBA in particular, and gotten to know as many people as I have over maybe the last 30 years or so, this is really one of the best people I've run into, you know, and a kid who is really sincere, is not full of himself, no games and no nonsense, especially among stars. I can't think of a star. You know, I know the ones with the Bulls are best, and I've been bad people, you know, but Jordan and Pippen, you know, even going back to Reggie Theus, you know, guys I got to know from the 70s team, Norm and Chet Walker and Bob Love. I mean, I don't know of a star that's ever comported himself, especially, you know, winning an MVP and reaching that level as well as Derek has, as sincere as he's been, as accessible, you know, just a guy who just doesn't have bad days, doesn't treat you. I watch him with other people, with the clubhouse people, and, you know, not to say, you know, guys like Jordan and Pippen were fine, but they could be very moody. Derek never does that stuff. So to hear all this stuff, and I'm sure it's not a majority. It's much, you know, and it's actually what happens in our political system. You know, people who yell loudest often get too much attention. And so I'm sure it's a minority, too, because most of the fans, I'm sure, you know, are supportive of Derek and appreciate everything he's been and everything he's done for the Bulls. So I think I was sort of responding to that, but it got me to think a little bit about, you know, the players over the years who I really consider the best, you know, kind of people I've run into, and Derek would be on that list. You know, it's not always certainly the most talented, and sometimes it is. I think Tom Boerwinkel, you know, who I knew from that group back then, Bill Cartwright, I would have on that list, Horace Grant, Brad Sellers. Was from those fans from the 80s remember much picked on for not being Kevin Garnett, even though we didn't know who Kevin Garnett was at the time, but being oversold so much. Ronnie Brewer recently, you know, I would consider in that group. Pete Myers, very much so at several different segments with the Bulls, most recently as an assistant coach, and now he's with the Warriors, who we just saw the other day out west, and just a terrific guy, just kind of brightens up. I hated to see him leave the organization. He was a guy, not only a very good coach and very well connected around the league, but really a guy who players respected, liked to deal with, and could really uplift a team when it was down. I probably have Steve Kerr and Fred Hoiberg on that list, and probably Nozioni. That's about 10 or so guys. And those, that, you know, Derek is, and it's unusual when a star, you know, kind of gets in that group. And so I think my view was, how stupid could it be to challenge everything we've seen with this guy, from with Derek, from his relationship with his family to his commitment to play. I mean, you know, you can't imagine how you feel when you're 23, 24 years old. You get a devastating injury that, you know, people say could affect your career. And then what happens if it again? And so these things have to weigh on you very severely. But more than that, and I think I wrote something about, some a little bit about in my NBA column for Monday, and I mentioned John Wall, not to pick on him, although I do from time to time, because he reminds me of Bob Hayes, if any old guys like me remembered a great sprinter from the 70s, went to play for the, he was an Olympic sprinter, went to play for the Dallas Cowboys, actually became a pretty good receiver. But he was just a great athlete that he put on the football field and told him to run down the field. And Bob happened to be good enough to catch the ball. A lot of those Olympic guys who tried it weren't. But Wall reminds me of that. The fabulous athlete, super speed, but just very limited basketball instincts. And so he had done an interview with the ESPN subsidiary, Grantland, I think it's called, and said he was a max player. And the truth is, he'll probably end up getting that. But what happens is, you know, that cripples the team. Because he's just not enough. He's not good enough to be great, and there just aren't, you know, enough great players. Maybe there's six or eight. You know, like Carmelo Anthony, he's a max player. He's a terrific player, but he's not great enough to lead you anywhere. You know, Derrick Rose is. You know, he is that kind of player, and we saw the impact that he had with a fairly limited Bulls team. I mean, you know, yes, Luol Deng and Joakim Noah became All-Star players. But, you know, we're not playing at that kind of level with Derek. You know, maybe you say, okay, well, if they got more minutes, 40 per game, and are terrific players. But, you know, all-star kind of role players. You're not going to throw the ball to Deng and say, okay, clear out, let's win the game, or Noah certainly. You know, the Bulls, to be 60-plus win teams, I felt 2 years ago very close to Miami, even in a 4-1. I felt, you know, a couple of those games just luckily fell toward Miami. And then before Derek got hurt, I thought the Bulls had the right formula with their size and with a star to finish the games to beat Miami. And so, you know, if you have a player like that, you want to protect the player like that as much as you can, because that's your chance. I mean, if you know, there are great players, guys who are going to be max players, so to speak, you know, like John Wall. In Washington will end up paying him because somebody will be under the cap, and if they don't pay him, then somebody else will, because they'll be so desperate, you know, a Charlotte or Sacramento, some bad team just needs an upgrade. And, you know, so that what's happened. So you have to match that or pay the guy, and, you know, he monopolizes your cap, and then is only so far you can go. You just got to get lucky to have one of these transcendent players, which the Bulls happen to have now, and with Derrick Rose. And I have no doubt watching him before games and seeing his attitude, and, you know, that he'll return to that level. But you really don't want to take the chance, and especially, you know, if you're a guy like Rose, if there's any hesitation, if you're an organization, if there's any hesitation, you know, you certainly want to take the chance, because he is your chance. That said, you know, Miami has been on this fabulous, you know, fabulous streak this season. You know, and I sort of, you know, got into talking about that in my column Monday as well. You know, how great a team is it? You know, do they get considered one of the great teams of all time? And obviously you have to win first, you know. And so as great as a consecutive winning streak is, when the Lakers won 33 in a row, they won the title. You know, when Houston a few years back won 22 in a row and was out early in the playoffs, that's not considered a great team. Now, I made the reference to a team I remember, the 72 Celtics, which at the time set the franchise record for the most wins. And this is after the Bill Russell era, when he played with 6, 7, or 8 Hall of Famers virtually every year. And they never won that many games because they didn't play. They had a shorter schedule back then, too. But that team won 68 games, but then lost in the conference finals. And you never hear them mentioned among the great teams of all time. So you do have to win. And, you know, it's kind of a fun exercise to consider. You know, I know, and I ended up putting the 95, 96 Bulls first, but, you know, my personal feeling was I liked the 90, 91 and the 91, 92 teams better because of Jordan and Pippen were at such an extraordinarily high athletic level at the time. And the defense was just smothering. It was difficult for teams to bring the ball up court, literally, against, you know, those two and athletic Horace Grant, who were long and they were fast. When Jordan came back from his hiatus in baseball, that was 18 months gone, he didn't come back as the explosive player. He was a smart player. He was still the best player in the game, but he was not nearly the explosive player. And Pippen, you know, was coming closer toward where he was going to have that back surgery in 97, which basically, you know, ended his athletic career, even though he played a few more years, but he was never the same player. And, you know, that was starting to bother him by then, and it was having issues. So that team won 72 games and blew through the playoffs. And I think they won their first, 13, 14 in a row. Their margin of victory was second only, and only by a tenth of a point, to that Lakers team and that won 33 in a row. You know, and so in the end, you know, what counts is your records and the number of Hall of Famers on your team, you know, those sort of things as history looks back. And, you know, I've seen sort of how that's done. And so you include those. I like the 86 Celtics. I like the 67 Sixers, who won 68 games. And because nobody really paid attention to that stuff then, I remember the story Chet Walker told me how they veered off for a trip to Vegas while going out west. And, you know, they had such a big lead and the season was basically over, you know, sort of, in effect, gave up a couple of games and could have easily won 70, but 70 didn't matter back then. You know, nobody collected autographs and, you know, nobody had special sneakers and the sports memorabilia didn't mean much. You know, 68 seemed fine. It was about a title and that's what they ended up getting. You know, and then you can debate. You know, I think one of those Boston teams, 64 team, I counted 9 Hall of Famers. You know, with some of the other guys that came over there, you know, at the end of their careers, maybe the 70, early 70 Knicks, 83 Sixers. You know, and I want to put a Spurs team in there, too, from maybe 03, when Robinson was still there on the end of his career and Parker and Ginobili were coming. They don't get a lot of credit, but that's 4 championships, and I think that's the 4th most of anybody. And then, you know, you have the 72 Lakers and the 87 Lakers, the maybe one of the other Celtics teams. And that's all, you know, you could make a case of 2 or 3 Bulls teams onto that and 2 or 3 Celtics teams. So, you know, Miami is going to get itself in the discussion if they win the title this year and even next year, especially if the next year, you know, with Ray Allen this year, they're a much better team than they were last year. And with Allen and Bosch, if he keeps putting up these numbers, it's going to be a team with 4 Hall of Famers. And, you know, that matters in the long run. And so they're going to be able to work their way in. I know there's always resistance to, except maybe on ESPN, considering LeBron the greatest. And, you know, but if the run continues, if the titles continue, you know, that team is going to have to be considered. And, you know, so is LeBron, you know, as great as he's been, you know, and frankly, some of the things even he did with a poor Cleveland team. And I'm not saying the Bulls were, you know, a poor Bulls team, but, you know, as of the point where I made with Derrick Rose, that, you know, a great team elevates limited talent, you know, and the Bulls without Rose are, you know, on a course to win, what, 45 games, maybe 44, 45 games. And, you know, that's a big jump from, you know, it's a big downgrade from the 60 kind of win team they were, you know, with Rose. And so, you know, when one player makes that kind of a difference, that's a substantial player. Anyway, looking ahead, toward the Bulls' schedule, you know, they sort of came out of that trip okay. Surprising to me, actually, I after that Sacramento game, I didn't think they had any chance in Golden State, who plays fast, scores a lot, but the defense was really good, and that's what it comes down to with them, if they can defend, because they, you know, they're not a scoring team, but they play that way. They don't push the ball. Even though I know Tom talks about it a lot, they're very controlled offense. They work down the clock so they can set their defense and really probably have the most success that way. I'd like to see them push the ball more when Derek's playing, but I don't know how essential it is now because, you know, obviously with Kirk Heinrich out a lot and Nate Robinson, I think you get out of the offense too much. But they'll see Portland, who gave him a pretty good beating out west in November in the trip. You know, Portland's an interesting team. They don't have very much bench. They're not going to make the playoffs. And I'm really interested about LaMarcus Aldridge. And you could tell there's a vibe there of some sort that, you know, it's not that he doesn't fit, but they're kind of going through some, you know, a bit of a rebuilding. Damian Lillard is clearly there. You know, the guy they're building around, their rookie point guard, is going to be rookie of the year. Terrific scorer, terrific young player. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Aldridge on the market this summer. I haven't heard that he's going to be. I haven't heard that he's expressed that. But you kind of feel that he was with the group with Brandon Roy that had their run, you know, and now they're going to try to and you know, they do like Myers Leonard as their big guy moving forward. So I could see them, you know, doing something like Oklahoma City in kind of different circumstance did with James Harden. You know, try to get some picks, realizing they're not good enough now to compete with the top of the West. I mean, you can't say that to your fans. So, in effect, you know, take a step back for a year or two, try and build around a couple of young core pieces, get a couple of picks, you know, maybe some future stuff, maybe one good young player, and then go forward. And if that's true, if he is indeed on the market, he's not a, you know, an elite star. He is one of these max players, but again, you know, if you pay him the max, he can't be your best player. But I think the future in the NBA is going to be more of these situations where you have two max-type great players and not three, you know, with the penalties coming and luxury tax. And, you know, then the Bulls have back-to-back over the weekend, and obviously the Saturday one's a big one with the Pacers. And, you know, that's an interesting one because I mean, you never want to admit, because anything could happen. You know, LeBron James could get hurt. Dwayne Wade could get hurt. You know, and then they're maybe not the same team. I remember the late 80s, Lakers went through the playoffs. They won their first 11 in a row. I think it was it 89? Probably 89. I was there. But and then Byron Scott got hurt in the first game, and then Magic got hurt after that, and the Pistons ended up sweeping them after they were headed to a certain title with 11-0 start to the playoffs. So stuff happens. That said, seems to me the East is all about playing for second, playing for the conference finals, which would be, frankly, a terrific advance for anybody. You know, if the Pacers got there, that'd be the farthest they've gotten since 2000, basically, or that one year against Detroit. The Knicks, of course, they've had a run of not even making the playoffs. The Nets, same, you know, they were in the finals, but that was 10 years ago with Jason Kidd. And the Bulls, you know, without Derrick Rose, if you can get to the conference finals. So I think that's what about. And while the Pacers, you know, the Knicks have had injuries now, there's questions about Anthony, how healthy he'll be with his knee issues. Obviously, Stoudemire could be out. Who knows how, probably the rest of the season. Tyson Chandler now has had it. And you see, you know, like the Bulls, you lose some guys. It's tough. You can't win, you know. As much as the coach would like to say there's enough, there's not enough unless you don't have your best players. But that said, you know, a lot were putting Indiana up front, and, you know, they've had some tough losses. They lost to the Lakers at home without Kobe. Kobe played just the first quarter ineffectively. Then they go to Philadelphia, which has had an awful season, and get blown out. So there is no team. The Bulls, for instance, can't beat. Of course, there's also no team that can't beat the Bulls in that group. You know, with Atlanta, with Brooklyn, with New York. And so while the Eastern playoffs is not interesting because Miami's going to come out of the East, I think it is going to be interesting because those next seven teams, Milwaukee too, you know, the way they've been scoring, their three guards shut up with Jennings, Ellis playing at a high level, Jennings finally passing the ball, and J.J. Redick, a great addition, probably the best trading deadline addition by the Bucks. You know, I think you're going to see a heck of a tournament among those seven teams. And then whichever one gets to the conference finals, you know, that's a heck of a season to get there, play Miami, you know, take your loss, presumably. It's okay because none of those teams are playing anywhere near the level of Miami. And then that's something to build forward to. So, you know, whether Derrick Rose comes back or not, and, you know, he could come back and then not play in the playoffs. There's any number of circumstances you'd see. I still think it's going to be an interesting and wide open playoffs with, you know, with all seven teams basically in there with a chance to have a fairly long playoff run. And then the Bulls finish it off in Minnesota, which would be a good look at the rookie Rubio, who's played well. But again, he had his surgery 2 months before Derrick Rose did. And now he's just starting to play anywhere near the level he was at. So really, if you're looking at 2 months, you know, and basically that was 12 months. So if you're looking at 12 months from Derek's surgery to be back at a level, and talking about mid-May. So he's really still not ahead of schedule. I mean, maybe ahead of his workout schedule, but not where he could be playing at, you know, any high level, even with a Rubio, who's not an explosive player. You know, he's a great ground player, great passer, great feel for the game, great forevision. And it'd be great to watch him. I mean, he is one of the players in the league that I really look forward to watching as bad as Minnesota has been because of the injuries. And really, if you forget, Kevin Love basically out all season with not as serious as injury as Rose had. So, you know, there's been an epidemic of these things this year. And it'd be a good guy to watch, given the circumstances with Derrick Rose, and an entertaining player to see. So anyway, I think this is, where do you get it? Bulls.com and iTunes. You can subscribe. Because everybody says, man, I'd like to hear that guy's Brooklyn accent some more. So anyway, thanks for listening in, and catch me next week.